roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai, open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:45 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge. Glad you could listen. Jason Croft is our technical director, and our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. During this hour of the show, we'll do something we do once a month on Focus 580, talk about children's health. Our guest, as always, pediatrician Dr. Robert Bocek. He joins us to take your questions on children's health and development issues. Any general questions we can try to answer. We can't really do diagnosis over the radio, but we'll do our best to provide some guidance. We also have a special guest this morning, and that is Professor Dara Stelly. She's assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she specializes in children and exercise. And in fact, her primary research interests are in children, physical activity, and learning. Her work has specifically focused on the effects of physical fitness and activity on motor and cognitive performance in children. And she's also examined the effectiveness of physical education programs with regard to student achievement of state and national standards. So we'll talk a bit about kids and exercise during the show. Any questions along those lines are welcome, and general questions on children's health and development also are welcome. All you have to do is call us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And to both of you, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you again.
It's good to be back again.
Right. It's been
a while. Especially on a day that's not raining.
Oh, I know. I know. It's been a while since I've had a chance to host the show when you're on. So let's start talking with Dara Stelly a little bit about her work. And I think it's pretty obvious there's a connection between exercise and health, but let's talk about children. What is so important about, you know, proper exercise as kids are growing?
Well, play and physical activity is a normal part of growth and development and maturation. And so it's a natural instinct for children to want to move. Mm-hmm. They move at intermittent periods. Sometimes it's a high-intensity jumping rope, and sometimes it's just rolling in the grass. But it's a natural instinct and a natural part of growth and development for children to be active. Now, we have issues such as childhood obesity that you're probably aware of and in the media constantly, is that children have a tendency to be overweight and unfit, which leads to health issues. And so I think physical activity is a natural part of growth and development, and also it can help to prevent such things as childhood obesity.
Mm-hmm. Now, you focused specifically on exercise and learning. What do we find about the connection there?
Well, it's actually pretty exciting work. Strong, back in 2005, in a manuscript, started to publish things that were evidence among children and physical activity and types of things that we should be considering as teachers, as educators, administrators, parents. And on that list was that physical activity could influence or positively influence academic achievement. And so my colleague, Charles Hillman, and the Department of Kinesiology, and I started to investigate those associations between the two. And what we found particularly here, right in the Champaign-Urbana area, is that there are strong associations between academic achievement in reading and mathematics with physical fitness, and the amount of physical activity that a child will have. And so there's positive associations between the two.
What is the connection in terms? Is it simply a matter of someone being in better health? Is it a matter of physical brain activity? What are you looking at when you look at what's going on?
Well, actually, it's difficult to explain at this point, because we just know that it's important and that they're associated. Mm-hmm. So as Bob and I were already speaking this morning, we can't rule out that it's purely motivation, that a child who is motivated by school is also going to be motivated to be physically fit and to be physically active and to address things like, you know, health issues and be conscientious about those. So we can't rule that out. It also could be brain-related, as you suggest, and my colleague Charles Hillman actually looks at brain activity. And specifically, he looks at what are called event-related potentials in the brain, where the brain is presented with a stimulus, and then you have a period of reaction time. And you also have an accuracy to that reaction. And what we're finding in children who are high fit is that they react faster to the stimuli, and they are more accurate in their reactions. And so it could be that it's a matter of these change in brain functions, that they're more efficient, or it could purely be something like motivation or an expectation in the family house.
Well, intuitively, it makes sense that if you're physically active and in better health, then you perform better. Are there some surprising things that you're finding as you look at this?
I think some of the surprises is one significant finding that just surfaced over the last couple of years is that this notion of motor skill is also important. We had kind of thought that perhaps if we had aerobic activity in children and we put them on a treadmill and got them aerobically fit or had them walk the dog around the block or got them to play at the playground, that there might be these cognitive benefits. What we're finding is that motor skill, hand-eye coordination are also important factors. Not quite as strong association as the aerobic capacity, but it's that skill is important, motor skill is important as well. And I think that was a surprise to us that it's not just about running laps.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do this show every month, and we've talked a lot about, you know, children watching television, eating junk food. I mean, you know, it's so much a part of our culture. We're surrounded by these experiences. And it would seem like there are a lot of factors sort of, you know, weighing against children adopting, you know, healthy exercise, dietary, you know, behavioral habits, that, you know, the deck is kind of stacked against, forward progress in these areas. Are there some things that are coming out of your work that suggest things parents can do, schools, sort of, you know, things that we can do to increase physical activity in children that maybe we, you know, don't do?
Well, let me start with the parents first. Yeah. I'd like to say that, parents, if they can model that sense of physical activity within their home, this is not something that the school alone can try to tackle this problem. What it really needs is to be a comprehensive effort that stretches across the home and into the school and then throughout our entire community. And an example in the community would be having sidewalks and having safe playground equipment. Mm. So it's a community issue as well. But within your home, there's some very simple things that parents can do. The first one is having a single rule about television in your home. Mm. And that single rule could be as simple as we're going to only watch one television, or we're going to have only 2 hours of TV watching in the evening. You can't watch TV until after you finish your homework. But it doesn't really matter what that rule is, just the fact that you have one sort of guideline in your household that dictates how much television a child can watch. And so that might be number one. And number two is designate a period of time in your household where the family can be physically active together. And it doesn't matter if it's walking the dog around the block, jumping on the trampoline that you might have in your backyard, shooting baskets. It can be as simple as raking leaves and gardening, but getting the children involved in those types of physical activity and making it part of every day in your life. As far as schools, it's a little bit more of a comprehensive effort. There was a brand new initiative that came out last week that soda will be eliminated from vending machines in schools. And so that type of policy change certainly reflects progress. On a local level, administrators and teachers have difficult decisions to make. There's only so much time in the day. But certainly providing opportunities where a child can be physically active during the school day. Recess is an example. We have an initiative, a national initiative called No Parking on the Playground. So not only is it the fact that you get children outdoors, but that during that playground time, they're in motion in some way, shape, or form. And they can still have that social aspect of everything, but, you know, walk and talk with a friend or be active with a friend. So those are the types of things that you could do either within your own home, within the school, certainly the promotion of physical activity, a quality physical education program would help in a school setting as well.
You know, it strikes me, did you want to add anything?
But, yeah, there? You know, I think what Dr. Castelli has implied is that this is a family event. Mm-hmm. You know, you see an overweight child, and chances are this overweight child has overweight parents associated with them. So this, yeah, this, what's good for the goose is good for the, it's good for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is you've not mentioned joining a fitness center. Mm-hmm. You've not mentioned 30 minutes of a treadmill a day or, yeah, you've not mentioned heart rates going up. You've not mentioned perspiring and needing to change clothes. You've just talked about walking the dog and, yeah, walking to school instead of being driven to school. And you've not talked about, you've not mentioned anything that's super heroic mm-hmm. or above and beyond what people can do.
I certainly think that there are different levels of physical activity within your household, and you need to determine where you're at right now. If you're the type of household that is getting, your child might say that I have zero physical activity during the day, informal activity is the first thing that you want to do, is just think about how you can take one more step in your day or two more steps in your day, taking the stairs instead of the elevator. But think in terms of walking in your child's shoes. How can a child take one more step? Maybe ride their bike to school. Maybe you could walk them to school. Park your car, you know, a couple of blocks away from school and walk them up to the door. These are all subtle, informal changes that you could make. Now, there might be a group of parents out there who are already physically active and engaged in activity on a regular basis. And that particular group I would challenge to find additional ways to be physically active. And maybe at that point you could start considering things like heart rate. But when you're just initially getting started, just take one more step.
We have a call to talk with. Let's do that. Someone on a cell phone on line number one. Good morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to mention this was something a friend of mine had an issue with his his boy is eight now. I can't remember. He's seven or eight, something like that. He had a substantial fight with the school district. This is up in Wisconsin, and the school is actually a very good school in general. But his kid is he's a high energy 7 year old. I don't think but they kept fighting him over my friend over the fact. Basically, they were trying to get him on ADHD type drugs because you know he doesn't like to sit still. And I know my friend basically kept saying, he's like, look, you know, get him good and tired out on the recess ground, and he won't give you any trouble. And this was a major issue, but you know, it really took some effort on my friend and his wife's part to keep their kid off of. You know, they could have just given in on the easy way and said, okay, fine, whatever, we'll take him to the doctor, just leave us alone. And I don't know what the eventual outcome was, but, you know, some of these kids, I really wonder whether, you know, just getting them out and getting them good and tired out or, you know, letting them burn off that excess energy. I mean, I know when I was in school, I think they eventually, well, at least for the, oh gosh, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, boys eventually there was eventually segregated PE, but it was first thing in the morning. And I think that was probably a good thing because, you know, we get to beat on each other first thing in the morning and get that out of the way before going on. But I just wonder whether a lot of these behavioral problems that, you know, people keep complaining about would actually go away or at least be reduced if, you know, that things like this were scheduled in a more optimal fashion. I mean, I really don't buy that things like gym are optionals. they'll seem like they're really required just to, you know, get kids focused. So I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks for calling.
I'm not sure there's any room for us to discuss this. I don't think there's any disagreement. In fact, we were talking about that before the show. That yeah, as a practicing pediatrician, I saw a lot of boys, not girls, referred in at a young age for attention deficit disorder, and some of these I'd put on the stimulant medications. And many of them didn't respond. So does that mean the diagnosis was wrong? Or, yeah, does that mean, because I know there's a book written, yeah, we boys, unfortunately, are a little slower than you girls about developmentally a little slower. And, yeah, we're a little different. And, yeah, I think we were talking about this before the show. Do these boys in particular, well, let's not be gender, yeah, all kids should probably have breaks during the day and the chance for a little, I don't care if they walk around the desk.
Yeah.
I agree. And one of the things I wanted to say to the caller was certainly your friend, the fact that the parent was involved in school, period, regardless of the issue, needs to be applauded, because children who have parents who are involved in school are more likely to be successful. So that's number one. Mm. And number two, there's an initiative out there called Take 10. And Take 10 is where students step back from the desk and they take 10 minutes of physical activity. It doesn't mean that they jump up and have to do aerobics. It might be bending or stretching, or if they're actually working on a poem, they may read the poem and act out the poetry. It just gives children an opportunity to move within schools, but those types of initiatives are just taking off. So teachers haven't been trained in those types of how to implement them in their classroom quite yet. So hopefully we'll see a little bit more of that down the road.
Good. We have another caller to talk with, someone in Urbana, line number one. Good morning.
Show. I want to just kind of pile into the last caller and actually challenge that there is a lot of things that, you know, perhaps medical professionals and exercise professionals can do to help put this on the agenda. You know, our poorest neighborhood school in Urbana has no gym facility. By the time you feed kids breakfast and then through, you know, 2 hours of lunch, you know, there's just no time to get these kids any kind of organized indoor activity during the winter. And so I really appreciate that being put up as a topic because they certainly do line up for the school nurse when they get their treatment dose every day. And then we really pay lip service here, at least in Urbana, to the fact that, you know, the body is something that needs to be educated as much as the mind. And before I go completely off on NCLB and the ridiculousness of the administration and all that, I'll just hang up and thank you very much for your program. And, yes, get kids out there and get them working, because that will definitely calm them down. And whole child educators know that. People who educate to test don't. So, okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks for the call. Well, any comment? I mean, I think that the caller alludes to some of the changes in educational policy, No Child Left Behind. Some schools are eliminating PE. Yes. And it seems like that we need to come to some kind of understanding of what's the right balance. I mean, it's great. We got to teach reading and mathematics and hopefully history and science and all these things, all the intellectual things that people need. But in addition, you know, physical activity, number one, just because it's healthy, and maybe because of what you're finding, that it helps them read better.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of feel for the teachers and the administrators and as well as the parents out there. I mean, who doesn't want a child to read? And so the intent of No Child Left Behind is very powerful. I think the error is perhaps in the implementation, is that we're sacrificing one thing for another. And what really the findings that, you know, from our work is that we need to have both, and we need to make room for both, which means coming to a compromise. And again, the example of taking 10 is a simple way to put physical activity back into the school day, so you don't have children sitting for 6 hours, with the exception of walking down to the lunchroom to eat and walking back. And we have had several schools. There's an article by Pellegrini nationwide that have completely eliminated recess. and physical education programs have simultaneously been reduced. Or a little hidden thing that's happening is many children are pulled from physical education class for remediation in reading or in math. And again, we understand that there are children who may need extra time, but here potentially is a benefit or a benefit, and they're being removed from that potential benefit to try to work on their reading and writing. So.
Good. Well, let me just reintroduce our guests. We're talking this morning about children's health in general and in specific children exercise and educational achievement and the links between those things. Our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek, our regular monthly guest, and also Professor Darla Castelli, assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health here at the University of Illinois. And we welcome your calls if you want to join us, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Go ahead. Yeah. You want to say something?
Yeah, I do. Because we were in a previous conversation, we were talking about trampolines, and you.
Oh, sure.
You stood up, and defended the trampoline, and I've gone on record here that the Academy of Pediatrics doesn't support trampolines, and I think the difference is the trampoline has evolved a long way since the Academy came out with its.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The trampolines they were talking about were the old trampolines with the sort of the bungee cords connecting the mat to the and nothing on this. Yeah, you had other kids spotting you. They were the waltz. And the trampolines I now see in neighborhoods are they don't have places where you can fall through the cracks, so to speak, and they have nice netted walls on top of them. And you think a trampoline is a good piece of exercise equipment?
Well,
if you could, yeah.
There's safe trampolining,
yes.
And there's completely
yes.
inappropriate,
yes.
unsafe trampolining. And I can't quote it off the top of my head, but there is an internet site that actually ranks all of the equipment out there.
Hmm.
And it ranks the netting, the safety netting around that. So first and foremost, you want to do your homework and buy equipment that has been approved, just like a bicycle helmet. It has a sticker and I think it's a Snell approval inside the bicycle helmet. Well, that's exactly what you want for trampolining, is that you want to make sure that the equipment is safe, that you always have a safety net around the trampoline, only one jumper at a time, and make sure that, it is of the appropriate weight. You don't have two children jumping on there, bumping into one another. But it is very aerobic in nature. And we are finding that it is something that children, may be very motivated by to go out and jump for 10 minutes or 20 minutes. And it ends up being a high energy or high caloric expenditure type of activity, as long as it's safe.
Well, my kids love trampolines, but I'll tell you, as a dad, they scare the heck out of me. I'm like, I'm just, a busted noggin waiting to happen. But, maybe wearing a bicycle helmet would be good. I don't know. Anyway.
No, I think the trampolines I've seen tend to have netted walls that are, 6 feet tall. I can't imagine bouncing high enough to bounce over these netted walls. And they're substantial.
I also think you get a lot of benefit from just bouncing. So no flips, no turns, no somersaults. Just going up and down and expending that energy. And it's amazing. Our son finds different ways where he's going to leap and kind of skip, and then he pretends like he's going to dunk a basketball. And just repeated physical activity that elevates the heart rate is what I'm recommending, as long as it's safe.
Yeah, and it may be good for bone health, too, because you put – yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an issue that I actually wanted to ask about because, weight training is generally something that I've heard is not a good thing for children to engage much in. Any thoughts on that, for example?
No, the only thing I'm aware of is, that some weightlifting efforts should not be done till bone growth is complete because it may interfere, and I'm not sure if I believe it or not, but it may interfere with, may smash the growth plates, so growth may be inhibited in the child under, I can't give an age, I guess, because all kids are different as far as puberty development and that, but probably, let's throw out the number, 17 or 18 for boys and maybe 16 or 17 for girls. But, weight training probably a good, it's a good muscle thing, probably as far as an aerobic exercise, it isn't, or it's somewhat limited.
Yeah, and it's not very aerobic in nature, and actually we're seeing our benefits most from those children who are aerobically
fit,
not just stronger. The American College of Sports Medicine actually has some recommendations for children in weight training, and it's very similar to what Bob has just suggested, that it's basically on an individual basis with a child. But they recommend not doing maximum lifts, mm-hmm. where you have free weights, as much weight as you can lift. And actually, the recommendation for children is, remember, you can use your own body weight as resistance. And so instead of truly calling it weight training, I would call it a resistance training, where you're doing a push-up or a sit-up or, light dumbbells that you might use. Certainly all of that is safe for children to engage in. Again, you probably want supervision from the adult as the equipment advances.
It seems to me that children have this, as you said, natural inclination to be physically active. They have a lot of energy, and it feels great to be young. And there's so many things that we do to sort of squash that, both in terms of our overall culture, the television set, sitting there begging us to spend time with it, the video games, which actually in some cases can be aerobic, but that's another subject. But in school, just the fact of sitting at a desk for so long and sort of this enforcement of sit still, don't move, it seems that that's not natural. And then we go on, as has been observed by a couple callers, to diagnose these kids as ADHD. I mean, it seems that – I mean, maybe we're just totally missing the right way to deal with the situation in many cases.
Yeah, ADHD exists. I'm convinced it exists. I'm just not sure I'm convinced that it exists to the extent that we're seeing it and diagnosing and being asked to think about mm-hmm. it. And I think the other thing we've talked about so far is we haven't talked about spending a dime.
Yeah.
To increase activity. And I think the other thing that bothers me is I know we've got children in our neighborhood, but I never see them out playing. We have a park nearby with a baseball diamond that I never see used unless they're suited up for a formal event. And I think we have the facilities out there, but we just don't use them. Go to your neighborhood park. That's all.
It doesn't cost anything.
It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And walk to the neighborhood park is an even better idea.
Absolutely. One of the things that we've found is that parents come to rely on formal, structured activities such as a youth sport, a uniform with a jersey with a name on it for physical activity, and it doesn't have to be that way.
We have a couple calls to talk with. Let's do that. And, another Urbana listener on line number one next. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
I apologize if you touched on this earlier in the program. On the subject of behavior disorders, anxiety disorders, and how they relate to physical activity, it touched a nerve. I'm a huge promoter of making sure that our kids get enough activity and are properly stimulated and are not sitting in front of televisions and eating and to the exclusion of exercise. What concerns me is hearing people make comments regarding anxiety or behavior disorders and attribute them solely to poor discipline and lack of exercise. And I know that's not what you have done, but I know that I hear people in the community saying, well, all these kids that are being diagnosed with ADHD, they're just an example of poor parenting or poor discipline, or they just need to get out and get more exercise. I think that we all have a responsibility, those who are familiar with these issues, to make sure that we dispel the myth that that these are not real problems and problems that we need to address, and sometimes we need to address them with medication. I understand, and the flip side of that, of course, is that we may be over-diagnosing or over-medicating in some cases where people aren't being properly evaluated. But I'm very concerned when I see adults saying, well, that child is just not getting proper discipline or not getting out and exercising enough. And if you just wear them out, they won't have that kind of behavior. So I appreciate the time to make that comment, and I'll look forward to hearing your response.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. And I have no comment to that. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the physician's job or the medical team job to sort through these children with problems and say, all right, what's the diagnosis? Is this a family problem where the family is not functioning well? Is this a mental health disorder that needs counseling or medication treatment and that sort of thing? And I think that, unfortunately, that's the physician's job. And I think it's a very difficult job to do well.
Well, there are all kinds of situations that you encounter, and every child is different, every family, and so forth. So,
And oftentimes, the child who had maybe an anxiety disorder also had maybe a dysfunctional family. So a lot of these things are multifactorial.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
They're difficult problems. And I think it's getting worse in this day and age where healthcare is, time's a little bit more limited.
Yeah.
Finance are a little bit more limited. Mental health care is not as available, and especially for the poor people who don't have insurance, it's often in this community, and we're a sophisticated community, it's unavailable.
Well, that's a whole other topic. We have a couple of callers. Let's continue to include them in our conversation. Another Urbana listener on line number two next. Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about your earlier discussion on weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a graduate student for 9 long years, I taught...
That's heavy lifting.
Well, I taught yoga classes, and I calculated I taught once about 3,000 students over that period. And I continue to teach yoga for about 30 years now.
Mm.
And I started to see a connection in the young kids that I taught at the university. They're, I would ask them, if they had weightlifted because they had really short arm bones. And I always got a yes answer. Mm. And I continue to see that. You know, whenever I see somebody with some short arm bones, I said, did you weightlift as a teenager? And they all say yes. So I've seen that anecdotally because there was a comment earlier that the person who said that they weren't sure that maybe... you shouldn't weightlift as a child, and I've seen this so many times, and I could pick it out. So I feel that it could shorten the growth of the arm bone. And I also wanted to make another comment. I grew up in the 60s in a suburb of Chicago, and we had a wonderful PE teacher, and I was really lucky because we had before school activities. So if you wanted to come, you can just show up to school an hour early, which a lot of us did. And so we had that, and then we had in-school PE, and then after-school team sports. So we were all getting activities 3 times a day, plus recess. And it just then became part of my educational development that not only do you work on, book learning kind of stuff, but using your body was also part of your development. And it's just really, really sad that we don't have that at all today. And, I feel really lucky that I got that. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Darla, what should PE be? What should physical education be? Should it be nutrition and exercise, or should it be supervised game playing?
Well, actually, I mean, what the caller had experienced in the past is probably an example of how we're training physical education teachers today. We are training them to be comprehensive physical activity directors. And so they look at all school wellness and not just what am I going to do for the 40 minutes when I have this child, but really they organize maybe intramurals for after school for those who don't participate in youth sports. Maybe they have a walking club, and that walking club, as you arrive at school, you put a pedometer on and you take this many steps, and they try to walk around the world together as an entire school. So we're training teachers in a very different way, in that it's a It's this effort that we look at physical activity throughout the 6 hours of time or extended care, 8 hours perhaps, of physical activity for these children. In the classroom, during instruction, certainly we have national standards. We have 6 national standards that suggest that we focus on physical activity, we focus on physical fitness, we focus on motor competence, which means motor skill in a variety of sport activities. Sometimes those don't even look like sport activities. They're parachutes and fleeing and chasing and dodging types of games at the elementary school, of course, and it looks a little bit more like sports at the high school. And then we also have a social component to our national standards, and that would be the promotion and appreciation and enjoyment of physical activity and how important it is for this whole notion of wellness. And I think that's what, without being really prescriptive, you know, having a cookbook and tearing out a page and saying, this is what I think physical education ought to be, is we should focus on those types of things and think of the physical education teacher as the activity director of the school.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, maybe we'll follow up on that. We have another caller waiting. We'll talk with them. Someone in Gibson City on line number one. Good morning.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I want to just kind of comment. Our youngest daughter was born with spina bifida, and she did walk at one time with leg brace, I think, around 4 years old. But one of the things we were told is that she was more normal than abnormal and treated her as normal as possible. And it happened that we lived at a house that the bedrooms were upstairs, so she would scoot upstairs, you know, and come down head first. And my nephew came to visit about her age, and he tried to come down head first and almost tumbled down. So she had a unique way, and I guess we just let her be as physical as possible with her limitations. And I guess I just would hope that people listening that might have a handicapped child in any aspect that you know, that they need to be involved just as normal, what we call normal children. And we were very lucky in her elementary school. The Phi Ed teacher adapted things for Abby. When the kids were doing something that she couldn't do, she would adapt something else for her to do. And that's just what I want to say. And I really have enjoyed listening to you and keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Hang up and just listen. Bye.
You know, I think the physically handicapped people need physical activity too. And I think one of the problems we had particularly we have in general with kids with spina bifida, since almost always they have no minimal function from the waist down, is they get sat in a wheelchair and just grow rotund. And I think you're to be commended for helping your child to be active in peculiar, what most of us would consider peculiar ways, but it worked for her, and she was very comfortable doing it, and I'm sure it's kept her healthier because of it.
I would also applaud your advocacy as a parent and the effort by the physical education teacher. And if that is the environment that she is to be most successful in, and that's where her peers are, then she should be, activity should be modified so that she can enjoy physical activity and be engaged at however she wants to interpret that or whatever level. And so I certainly am appreciative as well and would endorse that for other parents in a similar situation.
We have just about 10 or 12 minutes left with our guest. We're talking about children's health in general. Well, we haven't done too much of that this morning, but talking about children and exercise, which is all fine. Our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek, our regular monthly guest. He's a pediatrician and clinical assistant professor University of Illinois.
Yeah.
These titles. Okay, sorry. I should know this. I've done this show for a while. And also Darla Castelli. She is assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health, University of Illinois. And we welcome your calls if you want to join us in the time remaining. Just about 10 minutes left. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll free anywhere you hear us. 800-222-9455. Professor Castelli, we started talking about the connection between physical exercise and academic achievement. Just to put a fine point on this, you're finding that there is a direct connection with academic test scores?
We've actually looked at it in the form of cognitive processing. Mm-hmm. And so in a school setting, cognitive processing means, you know, taking a standardized test and doing well on responding correctly to multiple choice questions, mm-hmm. open-ended questions. But there is an association between aerobic capacity or your aerobic fitness and your performance on those standardized tests in reading and mathematics as well. We're also finding, which didn't come up earlier, is that body mass index, which is a combination measure of height and weight, are also influential. And the findings suggest that those who are overweight may have a negative association. Now, remember, these factors are related to one another, so someone might be overweight may also have a lower level of fitness or not be able to have the greatest aerobic capacity as well. So it might be the combination of the two that has the negative influence.
Now, is this fitting with other studies of different populations in the effect of exercise? I mean, does it sort of fit with the model of how we are understanding the connection between, you know, physical, you know, aerobic health or conditioning and, you know, the various ways that we function as human beings?
Now, the measures are slightly different for older adults because obviously they're not in schools and reading a passage and then telling us what their comprehension is of that particular passage. So, you know, I have to be careful about making comparisons to other populations, but we are finding that those older adults who are physically active, and that's really the specialty of Dr. Eddie McCauley in the Department of Kinesiology, that those who are physically active as older adults are seeing similar effects of cognitive processing.
Very good. We have another caller to talk with. Let's do that. Someone in Savoy on line number one. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time, one or more persons understood the need for physical education, and this eventually became shortened to PE. I have yet to find anyone who actually taught physical education. My experience is that these people graduated from what used to be called, I think, the College of Physical Education or something similar, and they coached the basketball team, or they did calisthenics with the kids. But I don't remember any story of any human being ever receiving physical education, meaning how to learn how to use the parts of your body and how to organize them around some sport that fits your anatomy, so that you can have some joy and accomplishment through physical education.
Dr. Castelli and I talked about that earlier, too, is, yeah, how we separate physical education from supervised recess. You 40 kids are going to go out and shoot baskets for the next hour. And, yeah, do we take the obese child who has special needs, just as we take a child who has special reading needs or special math needs, and do we put them in a special physical education class that has a little more, you know, some nutrition and talks about calories and that sort of thing? Or, yeah, do we single them out for special needs, or do we just in general say, you know what, this is what you have to do, and let's make it fun for you to do that, and this is something you can do every day that you don't need a gymnasium to do it in?
I'm not going to deny that a lot of programs out there or teachers individually are ineffective and it's not a quality program. However, I think we have a tendency to focus on that too much. There's a program called PE for Life, and it started in Naperville, Illinois, and now it has gone to a national level. It has an entire curriculum which really addresses the types of things that the caller was talking about. It talks about the why and why you need to be physically active and the type of activity that would be more aerobic versus more anaerobic in nature. And it really promotes this notion of quality physical education. That in conjunction, which in 1995 initially, there were the new national physical education standards. So I do hope that, you know, there has been progress since these things have been put in place, that now there are these expectations of all children who participate in quality physical education, and that there are national initiatives which are exemplary. These children have an outstanding understanding of why they need to be physically active, the ways that they can be physically active, particularly in their community. And this program, you can look up online, www.peforlife.org, I believe, and you can look up some of the qualities of that particular program. Phil Lawler from Naperville, Illinois, was the one who started it, and he actually, I believe, had some health issues himself, which kind of led to this, I don't want to just teach sports in physical education. But it became much more than that. That why be physically active, and who should be physically active, and what does it mean for me, and understanding what the word calorie means,
yeah,
and how can I measure calories, and how many calories should I take in? And one of the activities that's part of that curriculum is they set out six M&Ms. And how many calories are in six M&Ms? Mm-hmm. And what do you physically have to do to burn off those six M&Ms? And those are the types of activities that it's not just about refereeing a sports competition.
Mm-hmm. I just found that website. It is, as you said, PE4Life.org. So if people want to look for that, it looks like a very interesting site. Well, you know, speaking of calories, is a calorie or is it, you know, depend on what it is? And how does that relate to physical activity and this whole issue?
Yeah. I had my physiology professor in medical school, and this was a good number of years ago, and I think this is still true.
Yeah.
Weight depends on calories in versus calories out.
Yeah.
Now, calories out, all right, a newborn baby needs about 120 calories per kilogram to grow.
Mm-hmm.
A five-year-old, I think, is down to about 90 calories per kilogram to grow. Because they're still growing. They need calories to stock up to supply growth. We adults need about 25 to 30 kilograms or calories per kilogram. So, all right. But, okay, we're 75 kilograms or something like that. I don't know what does all this mean? And what it means is calories in versus calories out. And so what it means is staying active. If you're gonna eat M&Ms and drink soft drinks and these terribly calorie concentrated foods, you're gonna need to be more active to burn more calories.
We have one last caller. We can try to squeeze in. We just have about maybe 3 minutes left. We'll do this though. Rantoul listener, line number one. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. I want to refute the person who called a while ago about a physical education. I am now 82, quite active, not as active as I would like to be, but I grew up in eastern Pennsylvania, which is very hilly, three times, and we had to walk about a mile and a half to school. We talked about the good old days. But we had phys ed three times a week. We had a phys ed teacher. And one of my nightmares was having to jump over that leather thing called, I think they call it the horse. Mm-hmm. But we did have exercises. And then close on prom time, we would have classes in dancing. And altogether, it was fun. Now, I picked up an infection in the shower that I've had all my life. But I think that's a very small price to pay for the fact that I have good health now. Mm-hmm. And we did have exercise, and when he said that there was no, he had heard about the phys ed teachers and so forth. They did exist, and all around my part of the country, they were active, and they were also very, very good for us as role models. So that's my little addition to your program.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for your success story. We know that there are quality programs and quality teachers out there, and it's nice to hear kind of personal testimonial that does exist. I think if you entered a physical education classroom today, though, it would almost look like extreme sports compared to the types of activities that you had participated in. And what I mean by that is we really try to draw on the child's interests. So if bicycling or skateboarding or scooters, different ways that children are active in the community. We certainly want to promote and support that. So sometimes the activities are kind of extreme in nature because that's what the child's interests are today. So.
Well, we're at the point that we're going to have to stop. I can just mention again our guests, and if there's some resources we mentioned, the peforlife.org website or anything else that you want to mention.
Yeah, there's one more website by the Center for Disease Control, and it's called The Verb, V-E-R-B, and I'm not sure exactly what the web address is. We can get it for you.
Google that too.
Yeah, you can Google that term, but. Basically, verbs are action words, and so they are promoting action in children. And they have several initiatives where you select a verb, so it might be juggling, and then you act on that. So you learn to juggle, whether it's juggle a soccer ball or juggle beanbags or juggle scarves. But your child gets to choose the verb and then act on it, and you can actually put a log in online and track how you are using this particular action word.
Sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to stop there since we're out of time. Our guests, again, pediatrician Dr. Robert Bocek, our regular monthly guest on children's health, and also a special guest today, Darla Castelli, assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health, a fine program at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Support for Focus 580 comes from the Infant Parent Institute. With offices in Champaign, the Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infant-parent.com. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and coffee bar.
That's it for this hour of Focus 580. When we return in just a few minutes, we'll have an archive broadcast of an interview we had with Alfred McCoy, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin and author of the book A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. First, we'll take a break for some news and a market update.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
At 10:58 Central, I'm Tom Rogers with a market update. July wheat in Kansas City is still up 2 cents a bushel at 508 and a quarter.